is a special treat. We don't do this with every guest, but we should do it more often. But we're back with Kathy Diamond, and we wanted to cover some other points that we didn't have time for in the hour. So, Richard,
I was just mentioning, I guess after the show was over, and Kathy, if you could just comment briefly. I know, forget about the Jewish issue with the Germans. There was tremendous strife between the Germans and Czechoslovakians during his lifetime. How did that affect, do you think, his...
And we're talking
his life and his writings.
We're talking 1880 to 1900.
Yeah, roughly 1880 to 1920.
Right, right. Well, actually, Kafka was born in Austria.
Right, he was born in Austria.
Because the Czech Republic, Czechoslovakia, didn't exist until after the First World War.
Right.
When they took... So Kafka was actually born in the Kingdom of Bohemia. And Prague was the capital of the Kingdom of Bohemia. And it was all ruled by the Austrians under the Habsburg Empire. And so there was a strong nationalist movement against the Habsburgs and all the rulers who were speaking German versus Czech.
Royalty was going down all over Europe, right? I mean, basically. Right?
The Ottoman Empire that ruled sort of the Hungary-Turkey area.
And Russia.
And, all of these empires were disintegrating. Mm-hmm. And it was the Russian Revolution took place, the rise of these communist parties in Russia, the Communist Party, but all sorts of political movements were going on. It was such an incredibly turbulent time. You're exactly right, Richard. Mm-hmm. There was so much going on. And so it wasn't just that they were Jewish. The Kafka family also spoke German. So part of what Hermann Kafka's father did as a businessman was that he aligned himself with the Czechs. And when Jewish stores were being burned, oftentimes Hermann Kafka's was not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but his father was very domineering, yes, which is obviously one of the themes in some of his work. I think I read where his father actually encouraged Franz to study, is it called High German, the more formal
dialect
of German, so that he, I guess, would fit in.
Right.
For lack of a better term.
Well, you know, this was a phrase during the time was to be a man on the street and a Jew at home.
Right.
In fact, it was during Franz Kafka's father's lifetime that the Jews were really emancipated by Emperor Franz Joseph. And prior to that, and that's why Franz Kafka was named Franz. He was named after the emperor.
Right.
Because Hermann Kafka was so grateful for the freedoms that he could marry. He was one of 11 children, and only the eldest son prior to that could marry. He could have a profession. He could own a store. He could own land. Kafka before could never have been a lawyer or a doctor. These professions were closed to Jews. So that there was a real enlightenment, an opening up that took place. That's not to say that there wasn't still anti-Semitism, but it was possible for Kafka to become employed by the Workers' Accident Insurance Agency, which was part of the Kingdom of Bohemia. Mm-hmm. Although he was the only Jew employed, he did have the job, and he was able to rise to a very high position within the company.
He had a lot of girlfriends, didn't he? He never married, but he had a lot of girlfriends, right?
Kafka fell in love.
Well, he was a good-looking guy and a lot of hair.
He was a really good-looking guy. If there were a movie done, he should be played by Johnny Depp. Well, Johnny Depp a few years ago.
Yeah.
I was going to say, he's a little bit too old now. But
he was extremely handsome. He was very kind. What Dora says about him is that he was a born playmate, always ready for a joke. And mischievous and kind and would listen.
Well, his friend,
Max Brod.
Brod, yeah, said that he had probably the best sense of humor he ever heard.
That's right. He was the most amusing man he ever met. And what's there's sort of this new view of Kafka now. You know, he's always been thought of dark, weird, alienated. And while he has appealed to a lot of people who are those things, he's also darkly funny. One of the reasons is because there's tremendous humor in the story. And one of the reasons that I got to write Dora Diamond's biography and nobody else did is because the Kafka scholars who kind of owned Kafka, controlled the scholarship around Kafka, would not allow any of the PhD students to pursue this track of investigation as to what Dora had to say about Kafka. The only woman with whom Kafka ever lived the woman with whom he had a truly happy relationship. And nobody, none of the scholars ever pursued her because they didn't like what she had to say. They didn't like her religious approach to him.
Yeah. What would you think Freud would have said about Kafka? That's another book.
Well, I can tell you what Kafka said about Freud.
Oh, really?
He said, "Never again, psychology."
But what, wasn't there a a university do a study of his writings and come up with some conclusion like he may have been borderline schizophrenic or some?
I love it.
Diagnosis.
Yes, that's one of the theories. There are so many theories. One is borderline schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. One of the books that was published only 2 or 3 years ago makes a very strong case for his homosexuality. Now,
yeah, like he was a closet homosexual. That's why he never married.
But he went to a lot of brothels, apparently.
Yeah, apparently he...
Yes, as men in his time did. And he was disgusted by the brothels, which made him unusual. But according to Dora speaks very briefly about Kafka and sex. And they say, where did this idea of Kafka as an ascetic come from? He was sensuous like a child or an animal. Hmm. So I don't think there was any question in her mind as to whether he was homosexual or not. But this is the fascinating thing about Kafka.
I think he might have had anorexia too, for God.
That's right.
But I think I read somewhere where his tuberculosis, I think one effect of tuberculosis is your throat passage narrows. It makes it very difficult to eat regular food.
Well, what happened to him is he had tuberculosis. It went to the throat. That is
so he actually may have died of starvation.
Exactly.
Technically.
And this is the thing. The Hunger Artist you mentioned.
Yeah,
the Hunger
story, Artist. Yeah.
Which is one of my favorites. Is the first story, Kafka story, that was accessible to me was The Hunger Artist. It's 40 pages. It's a really good place to start. But this story paralleled, and he was correcting the galleys on his deathbed. And nobody missed the obvious. Kafka couldn't even, no longer could he eat. He couldn't even swallow one sip of water.
Jeez.
And so it's an agonizing death. And he bore it with such strength and such courage. His death was both awful and transcendent. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So anyway, I'll tell you, folks, if you go to Wikipedia and look up Franz Kafka, you will scroll for days.
It's got a long one in there.
Okay. I have a suggestion. Okay. If you want to approach Kafka, go to the San Diego Library. Go to your library branch and check out my book.
There you go.
Okay. It's called Kafka's Last Love. It's designed as an introduction to who he was, what he wrote. And I think if you approach Kafka first as a human being, who he was as a human being, you'll be much more not only tempted to read his work, but you'll be in a position to understand it in a way that is less fraught with anxiety and intellectualism. Mm-hmm. You can approach him intuitively. Mm-hmm. And there are so many different ways to read Kafka, to interpret Kafka. What I say is read him and get out of it what you get out of it. Read him, as Richard says, aloud, and see where he takes you. I like the aphorisms. There's a book called The Zero Aphorisms. Mm-hmm. It's also published as The Blue Octavo Notebooks, in which he wrote some of his favorite. You had one that you already quoted, Richard. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites is, "As long as you keep climbing, there will be steps. They will magically appear under your climbing feet."
Well, but if you just did an online search for Kafka quotes, you would probably get a ton of inspiration just reading those, right?
Exactly. So. And actually, there are several websites called Kafka Quotes.
Really?
Yep. He said some wonderful things.
Brainy quotes. Well, I guess you do. You know, the study might be right. You know,
you get smarter.
Yeah. I did. I have to say, I've been stretched. I am a smarter person than I was.
But see, you keep finding those
25
steps.
25 years ago. That's exactly
you keep
it.
It takes your mind to places you typically would not go. Is that the idea of it? Or?
And that when you keep climbing, you have a different perspective. Mm-hmm. You see things you didn't see. And in my search for Dora that took 2 decades of retracing her steps, because what I discovered when I went to that library back in 1971 was that there wasn't anything about Dora. She disappeared from the public record after Kafka's death in 1924. So when Sunup was canceled, I took that as an opportunity to find out what became of Dora after Kafka's death, because no one knew. And after 2 decades, I finally had enough to publish the biography.
You know,
you've met her relatives, or some? Or are there relatives?
Yes, that's the happiest part of the story for me. Was in doing the research, I found Dora's unmarked grave. She was buried in a pauper's grave in England.
Wow!
And I then learned about her family members, who had been so separated by the Holocaust, they lived within 10 miles of each other in Israel and didn't even know it.
Wow.
And so when I found the nephew first, and ironically, although Dora was born in 1898, her nephew was born 5 years before I was. His father survived Auschwitz. His mother survived Dachau. They lost both of their families. They remarried in 1940. They met in 45, married in 46. 47, Zvi Diamond was born. And then they immigrated to, by that time, it was Israel. And I found Zvi first. And then when I found Zvi, he was so excited. The story was published in a major Israeli newspaper.
So you found them in Israel?
In Israel. Mm-hmm. Then he found his cousins and his aunt, Dora's sister, was still alive. And he didn't know anything about them.
Well, she was in Israel too?
She was in Israel too. Dora's sister had survived 8 labor camps. And her last wish was to find out where her sister was buried and visit her grave. And so I was able to tell the family where she was and that she was in an unmarked grave, but that someday I would put a memorial there when I sold her book, the book about her. Somehow I would force that grave to be placed there. And Zvi, Dora's nephew, said, "We will not wait." He said, "You name the date, I'll pay for the stone," which was several thousand dollars. And on the 47th anniversary of Dora's death, August 15th, 1999, 75 people from around the world gathered at this lonely cemetery out in the East End of London and honored Dora with a stone.
Wow, that's cool.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Joe, that's like your Dr. Seuss plaque.
Yeah. Do you have, you must have film or video of that, right?
Yeah.
And is that on the your website, Kafka Project, or might be a good idea?
Well, it's in the book.
It's in the book?
It's in the book.
Okay.
You can go straight to the epilogue.
Okay.
Get that.
If you have some photos in, you might want to post on your website. I mean, what a great way. I think that's a great place to end, don't you, Richard?
I think that's the perfect place to end because it's at the end.
Thank you so much, Kathy Diamond. KafkaProject.com, folks, and keep up the search, and maybe you'll discover some great things about yourself.
And keep listening to our Kafkaesque radio show.
Absolutely.
That's why we keep winning awards.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, that's a wrap, Justin. Thanks very much. Okay, bye-bye. We'll see you next time.